The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayabhataka Swami on January 7th, 1991 in Melbourne, Australia. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 1, Verse 8.
Further developed the holy birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, from Mayapur Dhamma, preserving many holy places, building temples there. So Srila Prabhupada said, I am also trying to do something, following in their footsteps. And he said that the secret of success is to please the previous acharyas. Then he said that he was very grateful to his followers for also trying to assisting in developing the holy Dhamma Mayapur, which was desired so much by the previous acharyas. And then somehow Srila Prabhupada, he just became really choked up. He couldn't speak anymore. Tears were pouring through his eyes, from his eyes. And after a while, he just went around to chant Hare Krishna. It was the end of his life, basically. So, several times Srila Prabhupada, he revealed how much he was always in that mood of trying to please the previous acharya. It wasn't necessary, he had to repeat it every time. It was obvious that he was thinking about that all of the time. Not that the acharya considers himself the new authority and he forgets about all the previous acharyas. That may be the Mayavadi system. We have heard that Mayavadis, they all think that when they become sannyas or they become guru, they think they are become God. So they can do whatever they like. Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Deva, Maheshwaran, they like this type of mantra. So we understand that for them, the previous guru is something like a doormat. You step your, put your foot on his head and you go into the nirvana or the Brahma Jyoti. But in our Vaishnava tradition, we are personalists. And we are always remembering the previous acharyas in disciplic succession and trying to keep their desires at the top of our consciousness. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he illustrated this very strongly. Although the first commentator of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sridhar Swami, did not, he gave a nice commentation of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but it may not have been the most extensive. Actually, later on, other commentators further expounded on the Srimad Bhagavatam. But Lord Chaitanya didn't appreciate and somebody didn't respect the original commentator. In fact, when one commentator somehow reduced the position of Sridhara Swami's commentation, then Lord Chaitanya said that you're not being loyal to your Swami. Indirectly using an allegory that Swami means both sannyasi, it also means husband. And so if you tell a woman she's not faithful to her husband, it means indirectly you're saying that she's like a loose woman. Or even a prostitute. Lord Chaitanya, he was very strict on this point. Whoever the previous acharyas are, we always offer them respect. We take whatever contribution they've had to offer. We try to preserve that, expand it. If we can expand something, further develop it, that's alright. But not at their expense. With all respect and honor and accreditation given to them. Not that we're trying to one-up them. We're rather trying to serve them and fulfill their purpose. They'll be more pleased if we're able to further what they've done and further expand it. It's not that because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur built a bigger temple than Bhakti Vinod Thakur, that was offensive to Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Rather, how much more pleased Bhakti Vinod Thakur be than a bigger temple came. Similarly, in ISKCON, if we are able to build a more glorious, beautiful temple for Lord Chaitanya at the Holy Dhamma of Mayapur, certainly that will be more pleased, giving more pleasure to the previous acharyas. All the contemporary preachers in Mayapur were trying to hint to Prabhupada, if you build a bigger temple than the birthplace, that will be displeasing to the previous acharyas. All this is a political statement. So Srila Prabhupada was illustrating that actually his desire was always rather to please them. So sometimes this came out like that. He revealed how much he was thinking about pleasing them. And he mentioned that if anybody can build a 30-story skyscraper in Mayapur, then they'll be taken back to the spiritual world. And someone asked Srila Prabhupada, if we get the President of the United States and the King of England to come and open up at the inauguration day the big temple, will that be pleasing to the previous acharyas? I mean, they got into the problem and said, if you can do that, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur would come from the spiritual world and take you hand in hand right back. It's an So, that way Srila Prabhupada, he was just always keeping in his heart that this is something very pleasing to the previous acharyas. This is how they wanted it, this is what they wanted. And this way he was instructing. So here in this verse, the great sages, they're glorifying Sudha Goswami. You are submissive to your spiritual masters, and therefore they have endowed you with all their blessings. Submissiveness and insolence, or what's the opposite of submissiveness? Unsubmissiveness. Those who are unsubmissive. They don't follow what the previous acharyas say. They want to present their idea as something exclusive or better, or they don't follow their instructions. So in this way, they're actually creating a disturbance to the disciplic succession. The point that Prabhupada said, that the sages of Naimisharani were confident that Srila Sutta Goswami was bona fide. Therefore, they were anxious to hear from him. What is the qualification of being bona fide? If someone is unsubmissive to their guru, then how can he represent the guru? If someone is not submissive and learning everything from the guru and then faithfully presenting the same idea, then the guru parampara transmission, how will it be maintained? By oral reception, by blessings of the guru, someone can understand the Krishna conscious philosophy, can get the essence of Krishna consciousness, and then in turn can hand that on. But if someone is not submissive, if they're not listening like that, then, naturally, if they're putting their own ideas, the same message is not being handed down. It's something tainted, something different. So, this was what Lord Chaitanya was protesting in to one great pandit. But you may be very learned, but because you're neglecting the original commentator, therefore you're deviating. You have to preserve what they have done, and then further beyond that you can explain something, but not at their expense. But if we try to be more intelligent than the previous acharyas and present our own ideas as being contradicted to them, then how are we bona fide? We are slightly deviating. That was the problem of Sutta Goswami's father. He was also extremely erudite, but somehow he was not getting that point, the essence. Some lack of submissiveness was there when the original guru, Balaram, came on the scene. He should have stood up, offered some respect. It's not an ordinary thing when the Lord himself is come. Vyasa Sadhinja is sitting on the seat of Vyas, representing Vyas. Vyas Dev himself comes. Certainly he'll get up and offer respect. If he tells you to sit back down and give the class, so do it. But if you offer that you're the person I'm representing, you come and whatever you want is your seat. So here Balaram is coming, but he's thinking that I'm on the seat. I don't have to offer respect to anybody. So if somehow his vision got a little tainted. Otherwise, why Balaram will walk up to him and give him a little grass on the head? Which took away his life and left everybody without a teacher. There's no doubt that Roma Harshana was a great pandit, otherwise he wouldn't be sitting there in front of all the great sages. But why was he kicked off his seat? Why was he lowered down? He wouldn't offer his obeisances or respect to Balaram. He was forced to lie down on the ground before Balaram. So, we can understand here that although scientific learning is essential to be able to speak on the science of Krishna consciousness, but even more essential, or the essential part to know that someone has scientifically learned the science of Krishna consciousness, is that one was submissive to his spiritual master and is being faithful to that message. If we find some different, somebody is presenting that I know something different from my guru in a way which is not respectful, it's not a sign that a person is greater. It's a sign that a person may be like Rama Harshana, unqualified. So it's very important to be faithful and submissive to the instructions of the previous acharya. That is our link with the whole disciplined succession. So that is what the great sages were analyzing. They just lost their teacher, their guru. They saw that Balaram was accepting Suta Goswami, and they're reflecting that why Suta Goswami has been put here on the asana. Because he's submissive. He's faithful. He's learned from his spiritual masters and received their blessing for his submissive, faithful nature. There may be a challenging disciple, or there may be a motivated disciple, or there may be many types of disciples. The gentle disciple is concerned how to please his spiritual master. This is the type of disciple that everyone needs to be, following in the footsteps of this great devotee. Also, before accepting a guru, someone should be confident the guru is bona fide. That confidence should not be based on some sentiment, but it should be based on the real criteria for who is a bona fide guru. Many people are confident that someone is a bona fide guru because he can produce ashes from his picture, or he can make rasgullas appear from the air. One famous physician recently came to Mayapur and said he exposed one famous so-called avatar, that he was nothing but a magician. When he came up to the magician, and the magician was just posing as an ordinary person, and he said that, "I'm feeling anxiety. My Lord, please bless me that I can be peaceful. Give me your blessing." So then that so-called avatar, he went like this and handed him a rasgulla. And the magician went like this. "We can do that also. Still we're not feeling peace. Here, please take a sentence." "Who are you?" Immediately took him to the back. He said, "Why are you doing all these things? You're just doing magical tricks, but you're presenting yourself as an avatar, this time an honest magician." "Oh, don't mind, please. Don't say anything to anyone. You know, I'm just trying to do some good religious work. People are getting some inspiration. Don't, please, don't mess up my thing." These things are going on, see, but so people are having faith in such magicians because they're showing some trick. No question of parampara or question of anything. Just like some sentiment. "Oh yes, he's very great. He's an avatar." So just like some sentiment, sentiment will be there, but that sentiment also has to be based on sadhu, shastra and guru. So the sages could see that, yes, Suta Goswami, he was there at the time, heard from Sukadeva Goswami, he was blessed by Vyasadeva, blessed by all of the, he was very submissive, he is blessed by Lord Balaram. So they are confident, yes, he's a proper disciple. What is the first qualification of a guru? Prabhupada explains, his first qualification is he has to be a disciple. But he's a guru, and that's his first a disciple. When Srila Prabhupada was asked, "What's the secret of your success?" he also mentioned this point, that "I'm just trying to please my spiritual master. If I could do anything right, I try to listen to him very carefully. By listening, then one is able to repeat. If you don't listen, how can you repeat? Can you explain?" So Srila Prabhupada was a very good listener. He also mentioned that one time he would always stay to listen to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. One day they were going on Navadvip Parikrama. They had gone with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, visited many holy places. There was one other place, I forget which one it was, it was a little bit off the path, too deep in track. So people were given the choice, you can go with the party and see that place and then we'll come back the next day. Or those who want to, they can just remain here at the main camp and hear Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur declare. So Srila Prabhupada thought it's more important to hear from the Guru than just go to see some holy place. So he stayed back to listen to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And while he was listening, somebody came up to him and tapped him on the shoulder. The Prabhupada was ignoring this, keep on listening to every word that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was saying. This person kept tapping and tapping and wanted to tell him something. Finally, succumbing to that person's poking, he just turned his head like, what is it? Immediately at that moment, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur just kind of bellowed out. And now you don't need to listen anymore. You know everything, or something like that. I don't know, something to that effect. I don't know if it's exact word, but you don't need to listen anymore. So then, Prabhupada just focused on the class. And after that, he felt like he got a special blessing from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Just that little bit of being noticed. His listening was important to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, proved to him that he was also speaking directly to him. And he felt very much, by being chastised, he felt more blessed. When Srila Prabhupada wanted to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world, it was other Vaishnavas that told him, what is the use? How do you preach in the Western countries? Those people are so much in mortal ignorance and passion. So the Lord Chaitanya said, Prajivite Achi Jatunagaradi Gram Sardam Tripacharite Hoye Vivornam. We should spread this message in every town and village throughout the entire world. Oh, at that time the world just meant India. He just knew by Prajivite the whole of India. India never, Prajivite means the whole globe. Doesn't mean just one continent. Like, but they weren't accepting. Neither was Srila Prabhupada accepting their version. He knew that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sent people to the Western countries, wanted the preaching to go abroad and send people to London. So, therefore he was determined to, he knew what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur wanted, and he was determined to try to fulfill that. So this is the meaning of a gentle disciple, someone who's dedicated to carrying out submissively the instructions of the spiritual master. So Srila Prabhupada, I remember in Mayapur also one time he was stating how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was always by his side. At every moment he was by his side. And how he was simply dependent upon his mercy in order to be Krishna conscious. Actually, there was some criticism because he didn't, every time he drove into Mayapur, he didn't get down and bow down at the Samadhi temple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But he explained that when you go by, it was in the car, all the different people like this to the camp. But he didn't go by because he didn't stop. He'd stop once or twice, but didn't stop every time. He said he didn't, he heard him that such a great preacher had such a little insignificant temple built for his samadhi. And moreover, that the deity, he thought it was made in the image of, it looked more like Rupa Durga. Didn't look like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur at all. It was like the deity was cheap, the temple was cheap. So they heard it. Plus he'd go there and they put him through a whole number. So, he offered his respect, but when he heard that they were criticizing like that, then he became a little indignant. That Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, my spiritual master, he's always by my side. Everything I'm doing, my whole purpose of doing everything is because he was concerned that we would be affected maybe by this criticism. So Prabhupada was, of course, anxious that we don't have a similar situation he was forced to be in, where there were many senior disciples, but they weren't cooperating together. And Prabhupada's intention was always to bring a unity amongst all the senior Vaishnavas. I remember 1972 when we had the first Gaur Purnima festival and we laid the Ananta Station. Prabhupada went in the deep in the ground of a 12-foot hole and laid the Ananta Station in Abhishek. So this will maintain the entire project on his head. He will, Ananta Station will be carrying it on his head. So that time, he called all of his godbrothers and godnephews, who were acharyas of different branches of the Gaudiya Math. He called them all together and then he simply requested that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted us all to cooperate together. Let us form a new GBC and cooperate together and simply work for spreading this Krishna conscious movement together unitedly, which was his desire. I have got manpower, I got money, I'm willing to offer everything at the disposal. Let us work together cooperatively. But then one by one they all faded out. Later one person said, admitted that, Swamiji, you are a world creature. If we join with you, then you will be head and shoulder above us. It's better to be the big fish in a little pond than to be a small fish in a big pond. Prabhupada was disgusted. What does that have to do with spiritual life? You're not to become fish, but to become submissive disciples of the Pinyas Acharyas. So, then Srila Prabhupada, he proceeded to organize ISKCON in the way that he knew Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to have the Sampradaya organized. And he requested his followers to please learn from others' mistakes, don't make the same mistake, somehow or another stay united in serving his instructions. So, of course, there are many tests by Kali Yuga and Maya, but somehow or another the devotees are remaining steadfast in their determination to submissively follow obediently Srila Prabhupada's instructions. And that is what we can understand from this verse, that is the secret of success in spiritual life. We need Srila Prabhupada's blessings every moment. And we know that by trying to carry out his instructions, because he is all merciful and the previous acharyas are all merciful, that their blessings will be forthcoming and are coming. Spiritual life is not just something external, it's something sublime. It's something which is always in connection with Krishna, because it's not different from Krishna. Devotional service is one form of Krishna. So we cannot neglect Krishna and his pure devotees in order to do devotional service. We always have to be submissively following. And that's where, of course, the Vaishnavas help each other, because in case one person gets a little bit off, some other senior devotees may advise that this is not the ideal thing, doesn't appear to be pleasing to the previous acharyas, the Srila Prabhupada. That's our protection. Not that we should reject that as someone, but we should always be testing ourselves, and if someone else is asking us that question, is what you're doing pleasing the Srila Prabhupada? We should take it as the greatest blessing. And we should analyze whether it is, and if we feel we think it is, we should defend how it is. Or that kind of introspection and verification is healthy. Because we know that the mind can be our best friend if it's controlled, it can be our worst enemy if it's uncontrolled. And if it's not serving Prabhupada, then it's out of control. It's like Guru Maharaj, he's a great devotee. There's no doubt about his sincerity of purpose. But in taking revenge against his brother being killed by the Yakshas, he declared war on the whole Yakshas. It was getting so much out of hand, millions of Yakshas were getting destroyed, that finally Brahmadev came down, the little guru in the universe, and he just told Guru Maharaj that whatever happens, it's all right, but enough is enough. And what you're doing is not really, will it be pleasing to Krishna that for one yaksha, all the yakshas, even innocent yakshas, had nothing to do with that murdering of his brother, they should all be punished? So then he came to his senses, and everything was worked out, and the leader of the yakshas, Kuvera, he came down, he also, everything was amicably settled. So even that great devotee can get carried away in a particular service, but then that's the duty of the superior senior devotees or the other peer Vaishnava sometimes to just say something. Or even any devotee can ask, is what you're doing correct? And we have to defend that this is correct for this reason. Because everything we do should be backed up by the Shastra, by the orders of the Guru, and by the example of other great Vaishnavas. Otherwise, it's easy to start speculating. Through logic, you can prove anything. When Lord Chaitanya's Nimai Pandit, he once said that I can challenge anyone with logic, and I can defeat them. After defeating them, then I'll take their position, and I'll defeat myself and reprove them. Then again, I'll take the opposite side and defeat that again by higher logic than Vishim Guan. Logic is such a thing. Later, he said that now I understand all this logic doesn't lead one to the ultimate understanding of Krishna consciousness. Dargo Bahudur! It leads you far away from the point. But ultimately, we have to hear from the previous acharya. That is a higher logic. That they know. They are revealing the truth. So here, in this verse also, it mentions that because you have because he was endowed with the favors by his Lord and self-realized spiritual masters, he was listening to them carefully. So it was a proper teacher because he was conversant with all of the philosophies. He had learned everything from his teacher. You learn from the previous guru, and then you instruct it. This is the context, and apply it in the wrong sense. And then it creates some confusion. Prabhupada said the disciple, when he's listening to the spiritual master, that his mind should be like a clear slate, like the blackboard. Here now it's whiteboard. And the guru is just writing on it. You should just be hearing everything the guru says. Then afterwards you see, okay, this is what the guru said. Then you try to digest it, try to really understand it. If somehow you're not able to digest it, like you're getting indigestion, then you have to bring it back out through asking submissive inquiry. So what does this mean? I don't understand it. Then after everything is thoroughly understood, then you can digest it fully, then you're able to repeat it properly to others. So the principle mentioned by Jiva Goswami is that one should always be serving a Vaishnava. We should be serving Krishna through the Vaishnavas. It's also been explained that how the Vaishnavas are so dear to Krishna, that he said in the Bhagavatam that the Vaishnava is his heart, and he is the heart of the Vaishnava. That the Vaishnava is even more dear to him than himself. So he is more pleased when someone is serving his devotee than when someone is trying to directly approach him or serve him. Serving Vaishnava is the principle. Even Radharani states that if she sees some other devotee is serving Krishna nicely, she wants to go and serve that devotee. Competition between Radharani and the gopis. The Radharani is trying to push the gopis ahead to go and serve Krishna. Krishna is expecting Radharani to come. Instead, she pushes forward Lalita or Visakha or some Hindu lake or someone, and they go to serve Krishna. But they want to push her forward. They know you go and serve Krishna. They are more pleased to see her serving Krishna. So like this, there's a competition. And so all the top Vaishnavas are serving the Vaishnavas. That's their move. And Krishna himself, he wants to serve his devotees. It's interesting. One time, I was looking for the birthplace of Krishna Das Kaviraj and some other places which were not easily accessible. There's no road there. But we had to cross like some river and go some dirt road. So I went to the temple of Lord Chaitanya established by Gadadhar Das at the place where Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. And the chief pujari there is very favorable to ISKCON. So I requested him. He is also like a caste guru. But he's favorable with vegetarian or somewhat strict. He's maintaining the tradition. So I asked him that if he could please send a disciple or some devotee with us to guide us. If he knew with his area where that birthplace of Krishnadas Kaviraj and the Samadhi temple of Bhutan, Dr. Thakur, the ashram of Koda, Ganga, Goswamini, many other holy places, he knew where they were, which were not on the map even, or they were in the map, but it was hard to find them. So we had come all the way by jeep. We had to take the jeep across the river by bamboo boat. There's no bridge, there's no ferry. It was very tricky. I wanted to get going quickly before it was already midday. He had just finished offering the noon prasad to the deity, so I said, we came all the way from Mayapur, took us, we left in the morning, we're just here at noon. We want to go and finish the work. He said, you should take prasadam first. So we have to do Krishna's work, we don't have time to be concerned about ourselves right now. So he said, well, as a pujari of this temple, I am acting on behalf of Krishna. You have to do Krishna's work, but Krishna's own work is to serve his devotees. If you want me to give you a guide, you have to accept prasad first, then only Krishna wants to serve his devotees, so you have to accept, otherwise, I'm sorry. Well, you presented like that. So then we're discussing that point, of course. Competition. The devotee wants to serve Krishna, but Krishna also, he's serving his devotees. Back in the Goswami's literature, this thing has come up several times, that Sanatana Goswami was observing how Raghunath Das Goswami was living under a different tree every night, but there was some tiger that was wanting to go to the water hole, but there Raghunath Das was taking some water at the water hole, and that tiger was there. So tiger is dangerous. So Krishna himself has to stand and keep the tiger away from Raghunath Das. Sanatana Goswami said, oh, you're putting Krishna in so much trouble. He has to protect you all the time. You're living each night under a different tree, but then Krishna is standing up the whole night to protect you. Better you have a little grass hut, then it will relieve Krishna from so much effort in protecting you. So then, because of explaining it in that way, the Raghunath Das agreed to live in a little hut. One time it was Janmashtami coming up, and Rupa Goswami was thinking that it would be so nice to offer nice prasadam to the deities. But, we're just living here in the forest. We don't have any facility. He's thinking like that. Just the day before Janmashtami, one little village girl came in with a big basket of things and dropped off sweet, gore and grains and milk products, everything. So here, this is for you to offer a nice offering to your deity for Janmashtami. And she went away. So he thought, oh, this is a nice So he prepared everything, made a nice feast and offered to his deity. Then Sanatana Goswami comes along and he sees this huge spread, big feast being offered to Radha Govinda. And he says, where did you get all that? How is like the person living a mendicant in the forest, living under a tree, get, you know, ghee and milk and yogurt and grains and vegetables and fruits and everything? So now one of the village people dropped it off. Really? Who was that? A little girl. Really, what did she look like? Well, she was really young, you know, thin-waisted. She was, what was her complexion? Well, she was a little golden in color. That was Radharani! You're accepting service from Radharani. We are here to serve Radha and Krishna. And instead, you're accepting service from them. Anyway, you've already done it. But in future, should be careful. So the devotees, they want to offer service to the Lord. And the Lord, he wants to offer service to the devotee. So the devotee even wants something. This Rupa Goswami is thinking, it's nice to have a ring. So then immediately Krishna, all right, we'll put our rings. This effort is very high level. Not that there was anything. The level of the six Goswami's devotion, their purity they wanted to offer. In one sense you can say there is nothing wrong if you wanted to serve Krishna. But they are so much trying to refine their devotional service that they wanted to simply be offering pure loving devotion to the Lord and to Radharani. They didn't want that they should be put to any inconvenience. You can't imagine the level of their devotion. So, normally in religion, everyone goes to the church, temple, mosque, and they just pray, you know, give me this thing, give me that thing. They feel very ashamed to ask anything from the Lord. They just ask the Lord if it please you. If it's something bona fide, please save my spiritual master. Allowing me to remain some more time. If it please you. When the guru is sick, or this temple is in danger, you might do. But generally we don't want to ask anything. That's something for devotional service the devotee may ask in a qualified way. Disciple of Ramanujacharya, who was blinded by one Shivaite king. Actually, the Shivaite king wanted to kill Ramanuja. So he sent his soldiers to capture Ramanuja, but this disciple came and warned him and said, you take my, he has the white clothes and you escape, and I'll take your clothes and I'll go and represent you. If there's any harm that will come to me, not to your more important for preaching the movement of Vaishnavism. So in this way they exchanged clothes, and Ramanuja is dressed in white. He was smuggled out of the country to the forest and mountains. The disciple was captured by the king's men. They thought he was Ramanuja. They asked him to accept that Shiva was the Supreme Personality of God, who was the ultimate. He said that Shiva gets his power from Vishnu. He said, for your insolence and not accepting that the all-time destroyer is the greatest, therefore, I'm blinding you for your refusal to see the truth. So he blinded that devotee. And in this way, later, of course, that king suddenly, some disease came over him and he died in a few short time. Ramanuja came back, that devotee was in the temple of Vishnu Kanchi, Bharadraja, in Kanchipuram. He would regularly be chanting before Bharadraj, Krishna, deity, Vishnu deity. And his bhajan was so sweet that the deity asked him, you can have anything you want. So then he said, well, you forgive all those people that have tortured me. Then he kept doing his devotion. So again, the deity asked him, anything you want, you can have. He's such a great devotee, the deity will speak to him. Then he again asked forgiveness for some other devotees at one time had done something against him. Like to see Ramanuja Acharya, of course, the word got it off that the deity keeps offering him. He can have whatever he wants, but he's always asking things for other devotees, rather than for anything for himself. So then Ramanuja said, it's very nice you're begging for everyone's forgiveness, but you've already given your body to the Guru in his service. Now your body is not complete, so it's like I'm not able to do the maximum service it can do. So if the Lord ever asks you again that he wants to give you anything you want, you could say there's some property that you've given to your Guru, which is not completely able to do all of its services to the Guru because it's incomplete. Therefore it could be completed again, so that you could do proper service to be useful in the service of the Guru more completely. Like this, he gave some instruction. So after that, he did his bhajan, the deity again said, you can have anything you like. So then he stood up and offered his prayers, that exactly like that, my Guru has given me some property to my Guru. That property is not complete, namely the body is given to the Guru, has lost the eyesight. So if my Guru's property can be restored to full capability of doing service for him, then that consciousness, getting the advice from Ramana, he would never ask anything for himself, but he, okay, my body is also my Guru's property. Remember one time I stepped on a nail, and I wasn't able to go on Harinam. Somehow the word came to Srila Prabhupada. He wrote me a letter that you've already given your body to the Guru for devotional service. You have to be careful and take care of it. Don't be neglectful stepping on nails and things and not taking them. To take care of the body is the Guru's property. Take initiation in the disciplic succession. We are offering our body to Krishna through the entire disciplic succession. So our body belongs to Krishna. It's Krishna's property. We have to take care of it, not that people say, it's my body. If I want to smoke and die of cancer, I can do it. If I want to take drugs, it's my life. But for the devotee, it's not our life. We've already given our life to Krishna, given our body to Krishna. Everything is Krishna through the disciplic succession. So we don't have the right to misuse our body. We don't have the right to commit suicide. We don't have the right to take anything which is harmful for the body. We have the responsibility to engage Krishna's property and Krishna's service. When someone is doing that properly, then their whole existence becomes spiritualized. So Sutta Goswami is glorified because his existence is spiritualized. He's understood the esoteric significance of Krishna consciousness, and everyone wants to hear from him. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Any questions?
Today we are sensing this lecture is the basic principle of spiritual ecstasy, please the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada gave many, many instructions to his disciples for the followers of the Krishna consciousness movement in the years to come. And it also Prabhupada mentioned at one time that if you follow my instructions, you're my disciple. If you don't follow my instructions, you're not my disciple. So how do we know what is which? Because the disciple may not be able to follow all of Prabhupada's instructions. Sometimes, you know, they also come here with it. What are the really Prabhupada's instructions in any of the Srila Prabhupada wanted us to follow in order to consider ourselves of the followers of this?
When they take initiation, they promise to chant 16 rounds and follow the four principles. Of course, that's like the bottom line to do that. Apart from that, how can we distinguish which instruction was important or which one isn't important, which one we can take, which one we can neglect? We have to try our best to follow all the instructions. If we're 100% aid, at least we should be trying to do it. Fall into the thing, well, I'm doing these things and I know I can't do that, it's too difficult. Prabhupada's instructions are very practical. I can't even think offhand of which instruction there is we can't follow. He didn't ask us to climb the Himalayas, you know, barefoot, or to do something, you know, that was impossible to do. what he did was give us instructions which were very, they're the easiest way of getting the things done. Probably if you try to do it some other way, it will be in more trouble. Some instructions which are not applicable to certain devotees because they're not in that particular situation. There are some instructions which are applicable to everyone. I don't say that this may not be applicable in the sense that that particular situation he's in, that instruction may not be referring to someone in that situation. Say Prabhupada gave instruction for grihastas, it wouldn't be applicable for someone who's in sannyasa, and vice versa. Instructions he gave for sannyasis wouldn't be applicable for those in grihastha. But there are some instructions he gave for everyone, cooperating or what he wanted. So we try to do everything. Usually the responsibility of many instructions are increased as one's responsibility. When you're responsible for other people's spiritual life, then you have to teach them what the problem is. And when those circumstances come, we do what, when there's a decision, there's a crossroads, we have to decide what to do, what not to do. We should decide to do what was more pleasing to Prabhupada and the previous acharya. I wouldn't know how to sort out. We should try to. Everything we do is according to Shastra and Guru, so it's not like the devotee is. That's why the disciple is considered properly situated, is protected. We don't have to speculate what to do in this circumstance. When we're. The only difficulty, even in GBC meeting, anything is comes when there's a particular area where we don't have so much instruction from Srila Prabhupada, there's a most difficult situation. We just have a few basic instructions, we want to fill in the details. We have to research the previous acharya's works, it's the most critical thing for us. And if we have a direct instruction from Srila Prabhupada on a particular thing, it's the greatest relief. It's so clear, everything. And we forgot, we didn't ask Prabhupada any questions about a guru-disciple relationship, what would happen when he wasn't there, how he wanted things to be done. And if we had cleared out, because at that time nobody could think that Prabhupada wasn't going to be here. This was something unthinkable, even though we knew it in the back of our minds, but we couldn't consciously bring ourselves to just discuss that topic. Maybe due to being sentimental. If we had asked us any question you have about what will happen in the future when I'm not here, we should have had so much discussion because we didn't ask. It's our fault we didn't ask. So where we have Prabhupada's instructions, that's not like, oh, you get so many instructions, it's a burden. I think it's the opposite. Where we wish we had more instructions. We had asked more questions. Now if we could get an interview, I'm sure that people will come up with a lot of questions. So we didn't ask those before, we were not expecting. But we also will get the answer, like Prabhupada's books. In the books he's quoted different scriptures. We found where those scriptures are. And then in those scriptures it gives the context more details. So this way we're getting to Prabhupada, we're getting the instructions. But we feel overburdened by his instructions. The more instructions we feel more protected. Because it's giving us more guidance in all types of situations, what we can do, what we should do, so we don't get off the path. In the previous, or in the next one of these verses here, in the 10, said, men have short lives in Kali Yuga. They're quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. So generally in Kali Yuga, we're misguided. We don't want to be misguided. We want to be properly guided, and that's why Prabhupada spent all this energy in writing so many books, so we can study these books' instructions, so we'll be properly guided. So that guidance is our protection. If someone is not able to follow the advice, at least they should be trying to follow to whatever extent they can. Not that we should change, oh, the Prabhupada gave this instruction, it's a little difficult, so let's change it. Then we'll be able to. Give this instruction, I'm so fallen, I'm not able to follow it. But I'm going to try to follow it. That's glorious. by Prabhupada's mercy, someone will eventually be able to follow. That's why Srila Prabhupada stood out amongst all of his peers, because he kept hammering this point, whether we can do it or not, is Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur's instruction. We should try to carry out each and every instruction. He wanted that we should cooperate together, make a governing body, let's do it. But there's this trouble, committee management, it's a drag, so much problem, you know. Who cares what problems there are? That problem is our burden of love to carry out the order of Guru. So we can see that in the Gaudiya Math, they decided to make one Acharya, he's the one authority. Then later he fell down, and whole mission was splintered up. So in this kind of course we got to face similar problems that 30 responsible devotees, spiritual masters, they suffered spiritual disasters in their spiritual career. But because there was a governing body, it wasn't dependent on one person. Things went on and are going on. And devotees were protected by Prabhupada, protected by the Vaishnavas, and they're going on in their devotional service. The same thing happened in the Gaudiya Math and everything collapsed. So this thing can happen in Kali Yuga. So therefore we don't establish that one person is like the Acharya, that everyone has to follow that person. Someone, if they're Acharya, they're not that they're officially appointed, you're not the Acharya, the one has to follow you. Self-effulgent Acharya means that someone, his own explanation of the previous Acharyas is so clear that everyone accepts, they can easily accept that, yes, this is the proper understanding. That's self-effulgent. Self-effulgent means some people come around and say, look here, he's self-effulgent, really? Yeah, can't you see? Well, turn on the light, I can see. No, see, I can see, you can't see, look here, there's effulgence there, he's self-effulgent. If someone's self-effulgent, people will have to come and tell you about it. Right? You have to go and say, look here, the sun's in the sky. Really, where is it? See there? Everyone can see the sun in the sky. Self-effulgent means without any introduction, everybody gets inspired. But if people have to go around and tell everyone, look at, he's self-effulgent, that means he's not self-effulgent. If he was self-effulgent, he didn't have to tell people about it. They'd already feel inspired. Yeah, he's more self-effulgent than the other person. And then he criticized other Vaishnavas or Krishna. This is like, what do they call it? A travesty? When these things happen, it creates a lot of confusion. The point was, Prabhupada wanted everyone to reach Krishna consciousness. If somebody is really empowered by his devotional service, people will become inspired. You don't have to, it will become automatic. You don't have to push it down anybody's throat. You don't have to make somebody, administratively, things should go on as they made them. So many so called self devotion people have fallen down. So what we have to do is just be very practical. What if all for one? Who's effectively carrying that out? All glories to the service. And we can do it one with our devotional service. Because we know we have to serve the Vaishnava. You're a Vaishnava now. You're properly situated. I want to serve you. Only everyone who knows properly situated. So whatever Prabhupada said, we can't neglect anything. Of course, some things are more important. He said many times, those things that he repeated again and again are more important. Those things which he wrote in his books are most important. He gave himself what is the standard. What I wrote down is more important than things that I've just spoken. You know, what I've said in my lectures is more generally applicable than what I say in my letters. Because sometimes you may be writing a letter to a particular individual, giving them a specific individual instruction, which may not be applicable to everyone. So how many times did Prabhupada say that books are the basis, that book distribution is important? No. There's a whole book, right? There's a whole compilation of Prabhupada's quotations on book distribution. So we know that books are very important. How many times did Prabhupada explain about position of Guru? So there's also Guru and his disciple compilation. How many, there's a whole book of compilation just from his literature. So you can see what Prabhupada's important instructions are. But we can't say that any instruction is unimportant. But some may be more important because he repeats them again and again and again. He stresses that these are essential. Like when he said, this is the secret to success, that means that he's saying this is an essential secret, this is important. He'll say, he'll qualify what instruction. That sometimes you may, a preacher may not be at the highest standard of cleanliness, but that's not as important as overall everyone should be clean. But in case a person comes back after 12 hours of distributing books in the street and he's a little dirty, doesn't mean the pujari should think I'm better than he is because I'm really clean. And this guy's a dirty bum. He's been slugging it out for 12 hours in the street selling books. He's very dear to Krishna. Maybe more dear than the person, even though he's very clean, but worship the deep. So then, pujari should respect. He would bring a sacrifice, the Sankirtan Yagni for Krishna glories to your service. He's doing his service to keep the deities ready for. So you come back after seeing 12 hours of materialistic people, and you see the beautiful deities, and you get a little. The pujari is serving the Vaishnavas. His service to the deities is that I'm Buddha, I want to serve the Vaishnavas to help them in their enthusiasm to serve Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. So everybody takes the mood of serving the Vaishnava. Pujari, Sankirtan, and everybody. And that's the mood that Prabhupada tried to instill amongst us. But he always spotted out that we tend to think ourselves better than others and then lose our service attitude to the Vaishnava. Any
question? Understand what's the determining factor that makes one disciple understand the essence of the spiritual master's instruction and be able to determine time, place, and circumstance. Another who just imitates. Anusara and Anupara, another just imitates, and another actually understands. Is it through hearing and then inquiring?
This verse has some very interesting, some very sanguine words, sound, soumya. One was pure and simple, anugraha, by the favor of, snigdasya, one who is submissive, shishasya, disciple. That everyone can understand that there's a difference in how submissive a person is, how dedicated one is, that there can be a difference. It's hard to pin it down into, you know, but you can, there is a difference. Everyone can see that. Just like the, so many examples are there, that when Madhavendra Puri was sick, and in the end of his life, he was, I mean, he was so old, he would just lie in the same place, but he would, his mind would be, even though his body was sick, his old, invalid, his mind would be, his meditation was completely in Radha and Krishna. He was chanting that verse again and again, Dina Dayatranath. Oh, Mathura Nath, the Lord of Mathura, you're the protector of the humble and the merciful, the surrendered devotees, or whatever. In the mood of Radharani feeling separation from Krishna, he was repeating this particular verse. So Ishwar Puri was his disciple. He was his servant, the guru cleaning up his, that was just there in the same place where he was lying. And cleaning his body, sponging it down, and cleaning that place, and doing all kind of menial service. Spiritual master at the same time being very submissive and respectful. Ramchandra Puri was another disciple, but he thought that, okay, I learned something from the guru, now I know so much, I knew so much before. This is the, then he goes back and sees Madhavendra Puri chanting his prayer to Krishna. He said, what is this? Why are you chanting this prayer? You should just chant Hare Krishna. Study Vedanta. He starts telling his guru what to do. So this way he disturbed the samadhi, the ecstasy of Madhavendra Puri. And he cursed him. Get out of here. He rejected. Krishna was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a teacher, he was a guru, but when he was in ecstasy chanting the names of the gopis and some of his students came, they started to criticize him. Don't chant the names of the gopis, just chant Hare Krishna. Then Lord Chaitanya came out of his trance, but what do you people are telling you about? I'm telling you everything and now you're telling me. In other words, sometimes you learn a little of something and then the disciple thinks he knows more than the guru. So before one starts to instruct the guru, you have to be very careful. You have to be really sure the guru is off. Before you, properly submit yourself to the Guru and ask him. But, you know, it wasn't that Lord Chaitanya was off, he was in an ecstasy. He was Krishna himself in ecstasy. In the mood of devotee, remembering his two devotees, the gopis. So they couldn't understand his esoteric practice. They were just seeing him in a very external way. They were being submissive. Also, the point is, one shouldn't be foolish. There was, we're having a class in Mayapur, we had Ishta Gosti, and the Mayapur Gurukul headmaster, everybody there, His Holiness Bhakti Vinod Kumaraj, Admakatha, and everything. They were discussing about this. What does it mean to be submissive to the Guru? What does it mean to serve the Guru? So then they told this one story from Puranas or something, a story from some great Pandit. But there was one Guru, and he had many disciples. And he gave each of the disciples different services. So one disciple was to take care of the clothes, someone took care of the bathing, someone took care. So two disciples were there, each one was assigned with one foot. One took care of left foot, one foot took care of right foot. So the rest of them had to massage the foot, put oil on it, you know, cut the nails, whatever, anything to do, that was their duty. They had, you know, from 15 centimeters above the ankle down, that particular part of the Guru's body was their service. So, they every day would go and they would do their service, serve the lotus feet of the Guru, or lotus foot, left foot, right foot. So, but what happened is that each one would become very possessive with their service. See that this is my foot, and my service to the foot. You know, the other one began to resent the other devotee. That, you know, he's not doing his service as nicely as I'm doing my service. That devotee is no good. You know, he's destructing my service to my foot. What happened was, one day, one disciple fell sick, the one from the right foot. He didn't show up. So the left foot devotee, he finished his service, and then the Guru said, well, since the other devotee has not come today, maybe you can do his, the other foot. So, because his disciple had developed so much enmity to each other, while he was massaging him, he thought, just see, he didn't come to his service, now I have to do double, and you know, and he started, like he became more and more envious against the other disciple, thinking that, you know, he's ruining my whole situation, so I'm going to give him trouble, so now he'll know what it means not to come and serve the Guru properly. He's not doing his service. This time, broke the foot of the Guru. Screaming. All the other disciples come, what are you, broke the foot? They start bawling, they start beating him with sticks, you know. And then goes, no, don't beat him. He's just very absorbed in his service. Somebody got so absorbed, he just, you know, broke the foot. Don't beat him. So then, he got saved, and he went back to his service, let him do his service, he went back to his right foot. Then the left foot guru, the left foot servitor came, he was very angry. He broke the foot, I am in so much trouble, you can see all. It was very much more complicated to serve the foot of the guru once it was broken. To heal him, to get it back. So one day that other one, he didn't come to serve the right foot. So when the left foot servitor finished the left foot, the Guru said, maybe he didn't come today for some reason. Maybe you can do the other foot. So then he was doing the other foot, then he was remembering how he broke the foot I worked with, caused so much trouble. Now I have my chance to get back to him. He break the foot of the other foot of the Guru. That goes, foot! All of the disciples cried, you broke the foot of the Guru! Pow, 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 they start beating him up. And then the Guru, he said, why? I don't know. And then he just absorbed in his service. Don't beat him. So then this story was told, and then everyone was asked to tell what was the moral of the story. What an interesting
story. I don't know if you had planned to go into all that. But
the conclusion was, of course, that there are several morals to that story. One conclusion was that we are there to serve the Guru, serve his interests. But if we become foolish, then we start thinking that this is my service, my foot in any way. Isn't it? It's the Guru's foot. No. Instead, he's my service and he's ending the other person that was doing what. So they get completely off the track. To the point that the very person that they're supposed to be serving, the Guru, he's the one they're causing to suffer more. Like Prabhupada gave the example about the son's massaging the back of the father and someone says, getting it, no, I want this part. No, me, no. They end up punching the back of the father, and then the father saved me, so you're beating me to death. Prabhupada said, it's like that, and you fight disciples, they're fighting over who does what service, or this service, and then it actually caused pain to the Guru. So the point is that Guru should not be the object of our sense gratification, that I might enjoy the Guru, that this is my service, or this is my, you know, somehow it's like become a sense objective for us. But service means to do that which is anukulyena, which is favorable and pleasing to the object of our service. So when we carry out the instructions, we have to do it in that favorable way. The other point was, another moral of the story, that the Guru shouldn't accept a foolish disciple. And should I leave them in a foolish state? Is that Guru have to do that? Ultimately, who was forced to suffer more was the Guru. If he had his fanatical disciples, they were so fanatic, this is my service, my foot, then to the point they break the other foot, not even thinking that it's the foot of my Guru, and I'm actually supposed to serve, I'm not serving the foot, I'm serving the Guru's foot. I'm supposed to be serving the Guru. So the Guru also has to see that disciples don't remain on the foolish platform, or don't accept disciples who are completely foolish. Otherwise they may end up with a broken foot or a broken something. So there's a lot of kind of allegorical examples like that about the disciples and gurus using our intelligence, doing the service properly. So the sincere disciples, they actually understand what the Guru wants, and they do that. Prabhupada said, a uttam disciple means without the Guru saying, he can understand the Guru's mind and he does it. Madhya means that the Guru tells him what to do and he does it perfectly, enthusiastically. Kanishtha disciple means that he knows what the Guru wants, more or less. He tries to do it, but it's kind of half-hearted or unsubmissive, or he gets it done, but just more, just like barely, with extreme effort and pain. This is a neophyte disciple. And adham disciple, or fallen disciple, is someone who doesn't carry out the order. So that's not actually disciple. It's disciple in one sense, formally, but in reality it's not functioning like a disciple. That's why it's called adham shishya, or fallen disciple. So we should avoid being an adam shishya and try to be uttam, and at least try to be madhyam. Uttam will come only with the blessing of the Guru, who starts speculating. That comes by sincere carrying out the orders of the Guru. Eventually one can anticipate what the Guru wants. Intuitively. It cannot really be imitated. So at least we always try for madhyam.